Hello, welcome to Not Shallow. I'm Rebecca Collins. Hey, you guys, it's been a while. What have you been doing with your time? I've been basking in the days of Indian summer or spending my time sitting on the couch dreading the coming winter and watching the first season of Empire. I'm a little behind, I admit. I started thinking about the term Indian summer and wondering if it is actually racist or means something other than a reference to unseasonably warm, dry weather, but I wasn't able to get a definitive answer online. In all, two sites that I visited, one of which was the website for the Old Farmer's Almanac, which looks like it was, in fact, designed by an old farmer. Anyway, I have a lovely fall story for you, something I've been saving up just for this time of year, when the crops are being harvested and the grasses and the wildflowers go dry and the leaves whisper in the wind, and all you can think about is drinking things that taste like a pumpkin or eating apples, and the houseflies are all fat and lazy and really easy to kill. This is a story about scything. In 2012, my parents, who mostly lived in Florida but still had a house in Wisconsin, decided to sell the Wisconsin house. This wasn't the house I grew up in, but it had a lot of the stuff from the house that I grew up in and the farm that my parents owned, all kind of packed in various places. And so over the course of a couple months that summer, while they were moving, stuff got transported to our house. And pretty soon our basement was overflowing with boxes and our garage was packed full of various tools. There was a box of stones my dad had collected during years of working in the fields that he believed to be Indian artifacts. And he could be right. They're beautiful, perfectly round stones that look like they could be used for pounding grain. There was a table saw attached to a homemade stand, and this thing has absolutely no safety protections. There were metal rakes, hoes, a post hole digger. There might have been two post hole diggers. A wooden box of nails and screws that our cat Jones promptly peed into. And there was my grandfather's scythe. If you don't know, a scythe is a hand tool mostly used for mowing grass. Mine is old, and it's made entirely of wood and has one long curved metal blade. Its handles are black from soaking in so many generations worth of hand oil and sweat. It's an English scythe, sometimes also called an American scythe, which means it's heavy, curvy, and kind of awkward to carry around. Keith and I always joked about the scythe because it would be kind of awesome around Halloween to put on a black robe and jump out brandishing the scythe, scare kids like you're the old world Grim Reaper. In all the chaos of the new stuff, though, the scythe got pushed aside to languish in a spot right next to the furnace, which I'm sure is the best place to keep a scythe, where people usually keep their scythes, in fact. So fast forward 3 years, when suddenly I get it in my head that I need to get this scythe sharpened up and I need to use it. I called my local hardware store and asked if they would sharpen a scythe. And the guy said, "We sharpen everything but your wits." Then he laughed really hard at his own joke and told me he'd been waiting 10 years to be able to use that line. So I was pretty happy to oblige him. And then I immediately drove my scythe the 6 blocks to get it sharpened. Right around the time I got it back, I happened to see a posting online by an editor from the Star Tribune who was looking for personal essays about life in the Twin Cities. The example she gave was an essay written by a woman who learned to ride a bicycle as an adult. I thought I could do better than that, and I decided to pitch an essay about using my grandfather's scythe. I imagined it as being something between a Brooklyn-esque hipster hug for something old and a somewhat maudlin lament for what's been lost in our culture. She wrote back, "Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for the pitch. I confess, I'm not convinced about scything, at least as an essay subject. I don't know if this sentence meant that she didn't want to offend my Little House on the Prairie sensibilities or what. She continued, since I'm still trying to get the essay section off the ground, I need to assign essays for maximum clicks. That means I'm looking for broad appeal, relatability, and yes, a touch of controversy. She went on to ask me about anything else I wanted to pitch. But what, I thought, could be more controversial than scything? I was knocked down a peg. Apparently, while everyone else is out, I don't know, doing heroin or joining cults, I'm looking for some long grass to cut with a sharp blade. But if there's one thing I know, it's that when you're feeling, as an American, like you're not someone designed for maximum clicks, you can always turn to the British for solace. And, as it turns out, with my interest in scything, in Britain, I'm part of the in crowd. If you Google scything or scything expert, you'll get pages of results. You're going to find everything from the definition of a scythe to videos of scything contests to websites where you can buy a scythe and scything equipment. The world now favors lightweight models from Austria and Italy, to videos about technique, to a lot of newspaper articles. Why the fervor? Well, it has a little bit to do with Prince Charles and a whole lot to do with the TV show Poldark. Since I'm fairly certain you know who Prince Charles is, I'm going to come back to him and talk about Poldark first. Poldark is a British TV drama made for the BBC. It aired in the US as part of PBS's Masterpiece Theater, naturally. And it's adapted from novels by Winston Graham. And it tells the story of Ross Poldark, who is a young soldier back from fighting in the American War for Independence, aka the American Revolution, to find that his father is dead, the woman he loved is married to someone else, and his tin mines, I had no idea there was such a thing as a tin mine before this show, his tin mines aren't producing squat. The most important point is that Poldark, played by actor Aidan Turner, returns to an estate in ruin. That favorite British trope. Maybe you see where I'm going with this. The house is dirty, everything is in disarray, the servants have run amok, and the yard and the meadows are completely overgrown. It's time to put everything in order, and it only took until episode 3 to get to the scene, which is Poldark scything without his shirt in an English meadow. According to the internet, this scene broke the minds of British women, and probably a few men, and inspired an onslaught of journalism. Poldark doesn't exactly have the body of a Brit from the 1700s, unless he's a Brit who happened to have a Bowflex hidden out in his cow barn. He's got a serious six-pack. Maybe, who the hell knows, maybe it's a 12-pack, and majorly defined shoulders. This is the scene. It's not very long. Poldark is scything, and the servant is blathering on, and I've watched it 10 times and still have no idea what the servant is saying. Like any good piece of beefcake, Poldark has no lines at all in the scene. All he does is scythe.
They be saying that Jim Carter won't last 5 minutes and bump in jail. The fever don't get him, starvation will. Still, if someone we know hadn't spoke up for him, he'd be on his way to 7 years transportation.
I think what's so quintessentially British about this is that it's eye candy with a side of industriousness. Shit is getting done in the clean, fresh air. But not everyone was happy about this. Far from being pleased that a TV show was raising awareness for their hobby or their passion, scything experts were swinging mad. Here's a sample of headlines I found online regarding the Poldark incident. Poldark sparks complaints from mowing experts. Poldark fail. Organizer of Britain's biggest scything festival tries to recreate sexy topless shot. Poldark's meadow mowing just doesn't cut it. Poldark star Aidan Turner's muscles too big for the role. Prince of Wales considered topless Poldark scything. What's their beef with Poldark? Well, they thought he was trying too hard, for one thing. A quote, "The actor set hearts racing as he scythed his way through a field, muscles rippling and glistening with sweat as his dark, unruly curls blew in the breeze. However, the experts say it really does not have to be that hard, and there is absolutely no need to perspire so profusely." What about sunburn? Another article asked. Scythe Association Chairman Richard Brown warned people not to try to copy Turner's technique. "He couldn't scythe," Brown said. "We do a lot of work with film and television companies, but evidently we weren't involved with this one." The association's Steve Tomlin was similarly critical of his technique. "He was only scything for 30 seconds, but he was pouring with sweat. Everyone who knows scything knows how easy that vegetation would be to cut. I know the director wanted him glistening with muscles rippling, but it doesn't have to be that hard." Another quote, "Scything is an efficient and poetic way of cutting, rather than the way it was portrayed on Poldark, where it was this very aggressive, manly action." And on that note, I return to Prince Charles, because who else is better known for being efficient and poetic in every way? It turns out that Prince Charles is an advocate of scything. Recently, he judged a village scything competition in Transylvania during his annual visit to Romania. Because why not? He owns two properties there that can be rented, I found out. One comes with a resident ecologist, and activities for guests include mushroom picking, wildflower botany, bear tracking, and presumably scything. Charles has said that a return to a more organic way of farming is something he hopes to see before he dies. The same could be said for his hope of actually becoming King of England. A newspaper article said that when he has the time, he relishes getting hot and sweaty in the pastures at Highgrove and even took a 15-minute scything lesson, cramming it into his busy schedule of, I don't know, traveling between lavish properties and taking long walks in his knickers or hunting up foxes. Who knows? Throughout Europe, there's a trend of people turning away from lawnmowers and what the British refer to as strimmers. This is what we so ineloquently call weed whackers, in favor of the silent, meditative pursuit. There are scything groups, scything competitions, and something referred to as meadow mania, in which vast, flat areas are being turned into wide swaths of wildflowers and grasses. Scything is supposed to be a great workout, strengthening the arms and trimming the waist. Also, using a scythe should be a sedate, pleasurable activity rather than an arduous, back-breaking chore. It can be zen-like if you've got a sharp blade and good technique. But how exactly does one learn a good technique? And where does a city girl with no meadow go to scythe? This was my next problem. There are a lot of ways to describe how to scythe. The blade moves parallel to the ground and in various degrees of a curve, rather than in a straight line. Slice, don't chop. Do not carry the weight of the blade. Merely slide the blade forward and back in continuous contact with the surface. No violent hacking is required. It should feel like shaving the ground. Move the blade in a 180-degree arc in front of you. I watched videos in which experts silently but expertly sigh their way through fields of grasses or wildflowers or clover. My main source was videos made by a man named Botan Anderson, who runs an organization called One Scythe Revolution in Wisconsin. And this organization runs workshops and sells scything equipment and posts video on technique. Botan is what I would call quietly intense, at least in his videos. A man with a short gray beard who wears light wash jeans he's had since the 90s, tucked in t-shirts, cowboy hats, and a cowhorn whetstone holster at his waist. If you watch a video of him scything, this is what you hear. He favors Austrian scythes he stops to sharpen in the field with his whetstone, and this makes me realize that I perhaps committed a grave scything sin when I had my scythe sharpened at a hardware store where they ground the blade. Here's how it sounds when you sharpen a scythe blade with a whetstone. Botan's motto or credo or MO or whatever you want to call it that's posted on his website reads, "One good scythe per farm could revolutionize small-scale farming." I tried to contact him about places one could go to scythe if a person had a great desire but was not located on a small-scale farm. I tried twice. There was never a response. Next, I tried a friend I rarely see, but who happens to live in the country and who has a considerable amount of land, and I asked if I could come out and try my scythe on one of his meadows. His response seemed promising. "Well, you'll laugh," he wrote, "but I use my grandfather's scythe on a somewhat regular basis to cut the really tall weeds down. You've missed the prime cutting season, but there are always weeds available." Prime cutting season? Weeds? I mean, whatever. I responded that weeds were fine with me. These are the words of a woman desperate to scythe. When could I stop out? What work could I do for him? What day works for him? He never responded. Next, I took to Twitter, sending a tweet to an acquaintance of mine who works for the state's historical society. Did he know any scything experts? Yes, he did. He gave me a name of someone who worked on one of the society's old-timey farm sites. I sent an email, and this email was forwarded by a staff person directly to the scything expert. There was no response. I followed up a few days later. Had he received my email? The staff person replied that he was currently on vacation, but also, at the same time, very busy with a revitalization project underway at the farm. In her response, "Farm" was capitalized, as if we were talking about some Soviet collectivist project. She also said, "I will mention your project to other employees here to see if they have suggestions as to who to talk to, and I will let you know of any suggestions I receive. You could also perhaps talk with your friend again," meaning the person I first contacted through Twitter. "I am sorry I am not much help. Let me know if I can do anything else for you." I'm not sure what anything else would even be. Could she teach me how to make cornbread in a skillet? Grow rutabagas? Let me cuddle a baby goat and whisper my secrets into its ear? Give me and my friends a private hayride in a wagon outfitted with a wet bar and a stereo? I let it go. Instead, I sent a message to another manager of another historical farm. The person sent me a message back. "We are not a living history farm and really do not have anyone involved at the site at this time who could help you out." Here is where I kind of wanted to go off the rails and send back a very rude message. You're a farm, damn it, a farm. You have tall grass? I know you do. What does living history have to do with tall grasses and weeds that exist right now, today, in the present? I let it go. So far, scything was not proving to be very zen. The interesting thing about all this is just how few connections those of us ensconced in city life have or maintain with people in rural areas. I grew up in a rural area, but I left it all behind. If I was still living back where the scythe actually came from, I would probably be scything all day long if I wanted to. I would probably not think of scything as a fun thing to try, like windsurfing or disc golf. Suddenly, everywhere I went, I was sizing up the landscape. So many weeds and tall grasses, but all located in public parks or dog parks or private land. One doesn't really jump out of the car with a big old English scythe at a city park in Minneapolis and start hacking away at the brush. It seemed as if I would have a small crowd around me in no time. Some of the spectators would probably be very enthusiastic and ask if they could try it, but invariably, someone would call the park police. And I've lived here long enough to know that you really don't want to deal with the park police. And then, just when I was about to give it all up, I got a positive response to a voicemail I left on a whim for a manager at yet another historical farm. My scything prayers were answered by Melissa, a staff member at Gale Woods Farm in Minnetrista, Minnesota. She seemed busy, as all the various farm managers I'd spoken to or emailed with seemed, but she didn't question my quest to scythe. She said she was willing to let me come out to the farm and would even show me a place where I could get my scythe on. I wanted to record Melissa for this piece, but when we arrived, of course, Keith came along for the scything. She seemed even more harried and busy than on the phone and said she had to go to a staff meeting. What can I say? I lost my nerve. She said she had enough time to take us out to the garden to a patch of lettuce gone to seed that could be mown down. We walked the lettuce patch, me blathering on about Poldark for some reason. She showed us a fairly wide row in the vegetable garden that contained overgrown lettuce and weeds, gave me a quick demo of how she would scythe, and scampered away. There was finally nothing standing between me and my American scything experience. I tried to remember everything I'd seen in Botan's videos, how easily he swept, not chopped, how there was supposed to be a graceful shifting of weight. I thought I would just scythe a small patch of the lettuce. In fact, I even said to Melissa before she left that I didn't know how far I would get, and she said I was under no obligation to scythe all the lettuce, but that's actually what happened. I just started scything and couldn't stop. Here are my impressions when I was done scything. Not very eloquent, I admit.
Standing out in the field, I've just scythed enough lettuce to feed the salad bar at Old Country Buffet. I think there might be a rap song in there somewhere. But I made pretty quick work of the lettuce and the weeds. And it turns out it's pretty easy to get a good motion going with the scythe. It just kind of takes care of the weeds and you just keep moving along. And I guess it is pretty meditative. Like, you get into kind of a meditative state out here. And it's a beautiful day. There's no clouds in the sky. The sun's out. And it's just a nice thing to do rather than be inside sitting in a desk.
It was really beautiful out. It was that kind of day when you start out in a sweatshirt and long sleeves, and by the end you're stripped down to a t-shirt. The movement of scything is meditative. I know I did it wrong, that my form sucked, that I probably made it harder than it needed to be. And the next day, my right forearm was incredibly sore, and no one, not even Prince Charles, had ever talked about that. But I did it. I can imagine being let loose in a field of wildflowers or grass and scything my way to a solution to all my problems. meaning it's the kind of activity where you can find a lot of good thinking slash not thinking time that leaves you feeling refreshed. And as a side note, a couple of weeks after scything, I was riding my bike in a public path in Minneapolis, but I did see the perfect scything place. So I've got my next scything target all picked out. Unfortunately, I think that my scythe at Gale Woods very much dulled the blade. So I'm going to have to decide that if I'm going to take the next step and get a whetstone. I'm not sure. That might make me someone that I no longer recognize. But I've got this secret spot worked out where I'm pretty sure I could scythe for a whole afternoon and no one would bother me. Or if they did bother me, I think they might think that I was somehow official. So I've got that in my back pocket. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll be back soon with a special episode that will attempt to answer some of life's big questions. So be on the lookout for that. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends or network, however that works for you, whether it's tweeting about it or quietly slipping your friend a note or skywriting it, especially if it's skywriting it. Can't stop thinking.